Good afternoon. I'm Jill Orlando, Relationship Manager with the Chance Mantillon Group at UBS Private Wealth Management. Thank you for joining us today for our discussion of the Purposeful Dialogue. We're excited to have Julie Binder from UBS on today's call. First, I wanted to remind everyone that lines are on listen-only mode today. We have gathered questions already. If you would like to submit a question during the discussion, please email us at thechancemantillongroup@ubs.com. We will be monitoring that email. Also, just a reminder that your questions will be presented anonymously. If there's a specific situation you would like to discuss, we can arrange that separately. With that in mind, I would like to introduce Andrew Chance, Tom Mantillon, and Greg Merrill from the Chance Mantillon Group to introduce our guests and begin our discussion.
Thank you, Jill, and thanks to everyone for taking the time today for an important and interesting topic. I'm Andrew Chance, one of the managing partners with the Chance Mantillon Group, joined today by Tom Mantillon and Greg Merrill. Before we start, we just want to extend our wishes that you and your loved ones continue to be safe and healthy. We're pleased to be having a conversation with Julie Binder. Julie's a senior strategist with UBS Family Advisory and Philanthropy Services Group. Julie works with families on understanding money, values, and philanthropic intent in the family wealth context, and provides guidance on a cohesive dialogue between generations to perpetuate their legacy. And that's what we're going to discuss today, broadly on the topic of best practices in family communication on philanthropy, and specifically on the purposeful dialogue exercises. We're going to talk about the dialogue cards. If you don't have the cards, please get in touch with Jill and we will get them to you. With the coronavirus crisis continuing, it seems like a good time to talk about discovering your why and deciding what's important in life as a family. So first, I'll ask Julie to give us an overview, and then we'll have a discussion about our experiences with these tools and how they've impacted families and organizations. Good afternoon, Julie.
Hi, Andrew. Thanks so much for having me today.
You're welcome.
You know, it's always such a pleasure for me to work with your team, since you all believe as firmly as we do that families are so much more than just their financial capital. As you mentioned, at UBS, our team of family advisory and philanthropy services strives really to help families that we work with to think of their capital in five different ways. Obviously, you have your financial capital, but you also have your intellectual capital, the things that you know, your social capital, the people that you know and the networks that you're a part of, your foundational or story capital, the stories that are passed down that made your family who you are. And then what I think is the most important capital any family has, which is your human capital. So when we think about capital in that kind of context, we find that the concerns for the families of wealth tend to be about making sure that whomever they plan to pass on that wealth, be it the next generation, their philanthropy, or some combination of that, will be good stewards of all of those different types of capital. And the challenge is, how do you apply and make all of those different assets work for each member of your family so that all of your human capital can maximize their potential? And we find that challenges in that tend to be the lack of communication and air preparedness, which is one of the reasons that having conversations around values is so important. But they're kind of hard to get started. And so that's really the point of the purposeful dialogue. It's really designed to be a conversation starter and something to help give you some common language to start on that note. So I know you guys have been doing a great job of communicating out to your clients all of the calls that the firm has been doing. And we've done a few recently on things like helping children be more resilient, how to respect boundaries and navigate stress while sheltering in place together. And I know you guys have had quite a few calls just for your clients specifically on the CARES Act and other topics. But what we wanted to do today was not just talk about things in broad strokes and big ideas, but actually to help you and your family to open the door to having some of those deep, meaningful conversations about your values, as well as and hopes for the future. This is a time that can really be filled for a lot of people with stress and uncertainty, especially as people are wondering what is the future of work going to look like for those with college-age children or children entering college or even high school or younger. What is school going to look like over the next year? There's so much that is uncertain. And so this is a time that we could really focus on that, or we could take the opportunity to turn this into something positive. And I think that's one of the great things about the purposeful dialogue exercise, is it gives you that opportunity to have a more positive conversation about what's important to your family and the future. So the purposeful dialogue cards, for those of you who have them in front of you and who have maybe gone ahead and opened them in advance, you will have seen that they're made up of two exercises that you can do either in succession or you can do them at different times. That's one of the really nice things about the exercise. And they can be done as a family to focus on shared values, but they can also be done for those who maybe aren't sheltering in place with their family, or they're thinking about other things, or, you know, affiliate groups, nonprofit boards, or other groups that you might be a part of. So it's an opportunity to really open that door to a conversation that might not normally happen as you're sitting around the dining table in a more meaningful way.
So Julie, this is Tom Mantione. Can you describe kind of, you mentioned at the outset that these are a great starting point. Let's talk about the first exercise, the discover your why. What do you think families can gain from this discussion?
Oh, you know, I think one of the things that families can gain is really the opportunity to have shared language and common language around what is most important to them. So the purposeful dialogue exercise, and, you know, UBS created our own set of these cards because we wanted to really curate a tool that clients could use in our work to help facilitate family meetings. So the reason that we start with the purposeful dialogue exercise on Discover Your Why is really to get people to talk about what are the things that are most important to them. So the words do not have definitions on them. And the idea behind that is because language is such a dynamic tool, right? When you see a word like power, that could mean something totally different to different people. And so it's not just about what are these value words that we decide, because when you sit around and do the purposeful dialogue exercise, the Discover Your Why exercise, what we encourage families to do is everyone has their own deck and everyone goes through and chooses three words that really speak to them. It's a guiding decision about how or why they've made decisions in their life, maybe based on that particular word. And then one word that, as they look at it, they have kind of a visceral negative reaction to it. And the purpose of this is really just so that we tend to think and perceive our family members in their own way, right? Like we've grown up with them, or we have parents, we've raised our children, so we think that we know everybody. But at the same time, every single member of our family has their own unique thoughts and experiences. And so it gives us an opportunity to hear directly from each other about, well, what is important to you? What does that word mean to you? And how has it shaped a decision that you've made, which allows us to really kind of take a step back and say, you know what? I never knew that about my sibling, or I never knew that about my child or my parent or my aunt, and really connect on a deeper, more meaningful level. Mm-hmm. And when I say that each word may mean something different to different people, and I use the word power as an example. One of my colleagues was facilitating a family meeting, and the son had chosen the word power because he had such a negative reaction. He felt like his father had always been pushing and pushing and pushing to have more and more and more power in business. And so he had this really negative reaction. And at the same time, his mother had it in her top words because she felt like their family's success and their influence in the community gave them the power to really influence and bring about change in their philanthropy. So having that opportunity, not just to look at the word, but to ask somebody, what does that mean to you? And can you tell me about a time that you made a decision based on, you know, adaptability or innovation or whatever that word is, allows us to really, truly hear each other.
Thank you for that description. And Andrew, Greg, and I think later on we'll talk about some of the real life examples that we have encountered during our time. And I've always been amazed at how unifying that Discover Your Why can be for a family, even when people choose a word like power in two different ways. So the second exercise is a little bit different, right? Can you describe the way I see it? picturing your life?
Absolutely. So with picturing your life, and for those of you who are taking a look at it and saying, oh, well, that image doesn't look like it has anything to do with the word on the back of it, please know this is just part of our desire to be environmentally friendly. The words and the pictures are not related to each other at all. But the idea behind the images is so that each person can visualize either something they want for their life or their future, or something about that they've strived for and really hope to accomplish. So the idea behind it is you look through and you pick three images that are really designed to speak to you, your own hopes or your own aspirations, allowing you to think about what is my vision for the future. And we mentioned, and Andrew mentioned in his opening remarks, the idea that this can be a tool for philanthropy or it can be a tool for family. And so generally speaking, you would just want to, with both of these exercises, kind of set some construct around you, how you wanted to view it. Are you thinking about our own future as individuals, or are we thinking about our future as a family? And so picturing your life, and the idea is to look through and choose images that speak to either something you aspire for, or on the negative side, there's one that you would want to pick one image as well that really either is kind of the opposite of what you think about, or something that you want to avoid, or even just something that doesn't speak to you at all.
Thank you. What have you seen families gain from doing that exercise?
I think, like I mentioned, people tend to have a preconceived notion of who their family members are. And I think what really is transformative about this exercise is the fact that when somebody flips over a card, you see a word and you immediately jump to, oh, they think, you know, collaboration is important. And you immediately in your head have a reason for that. But then what happens is when you actually ask them, can you tell me what collaboration means to you? Can you talk about why? What we've seen in families is that they've either had an aha moment saying, wow, I never knew that was so important to you. Or I never realized that that was something that you struggled with and wanted to be a bigger part of your life. So it allows these relationships to deepen in ways that are really meaningful, whether it's from a parent who still thinks of maybe their child in their 20s or 30s as being, you know, they're a little baby still, right? And they're saying, wow, you know, I didn't realize that you have taken these steps and you've grown so much as a person. Or between siblings, it can be, you know, maybe we haven't been living under the same roof for a few years, or maybe we've been living under the same roof, but we've been so busy leading our own lives that we've kind of drifted apart, just having that thought that we'll always be there for each other because we're family. And so it allows you to really reconnect and deepen that relationship in a very meaningful way. And we've seen that. It's so fun to watch families go through this exercise because you'll see kind of a light going on behind someone, or this opportunity to say, wow, I never knew that you felt that way because that's something that's really important to me. And you'll sometimes see connections too, where people say, you know, I actually know somebody or have a tool that might help you accomplish that goal that you have.
And much like the words, the pictures can be interpreted differently. I know, Andrew and Greg, I'm sure you've done more of these than we have, but it never ceases to amaze me how many stories you can get off of the same picture that you look at it and you think one thing, and then people can interpret that photo in many different ways. Mm-hmm. And that always gives me a little bit of a surprise when that happens at the kitchen table. So can you describe some of the best practices that you would suggest to our audience to do these exercises, things that you mentioned having a firm construct on how you want people to think? To think about things. Anything else that comes to mind to help everybody get started?
Sure. Well, you know, unfortunately, one of the best practices is to usually have a third party facilitate the exercise. That's a little bit challenging right now, of course, but that tends to be a good practice primarily. And our team tends to talk in good practices rather than best practices because we think that everything can always be improved upon. But generally speaking, a reason that we always recommend a third party facilitator for this exercise is because, you know, Tom, let's say you and I were siblings and we had our own, you know, childhood issues where we were still kind of grappling or butting heads over certain things, if I push on you to say, well, why did you choose adaptability? I don't think of you as being very adaptable. That can come across as confrontational. And of course, I know you're very adaptable. I'm just using it as an
example. Do you mean to say that siblings could potentially push each other's buttons?
Oh my gosh, yes, all the time, which is a good moment to say, if anyone hasn't seen our piece on navigating stress and the impact on family, I know Tom and Andrew and Greg would be happy to send that over too. Yes, because pushing buttons is one of the things that family members do best, right? And when we are in quarantine together, it tends to be much easier to, again, push those buttons. So that's why
I haven't seen that at all.
No, never, I'm sure. So that's one of the reasons that a third-party facilitator is good. Also because the person who tends to initiate the exercise may also be the person in the family who tends to dominate conversation, right? So having a facilitator is somebody who can say, wow, you know, Andrew, thanks so much for your thoughts on that, but we really haven't heard anything from Greg. Greg, could you share a little bit more about that?
And we know that that's never true.
Never,
right.
Never.
We always hear from Greg, right, Greg?
Yes.
That's right. Unless I'm on mute, then you can hear from me.
So yes. It's interesting you say that. One of the good practices that my family has used in these, and Andrew and I have used with families in the past, is to have a clear order of who's going to talk and when, and to ask everybody else in the family to kind of hold their thoughts and have a piece of paper and a pencil and write things down if they're thinking about a comment or a suggestion or just a reaction to a family member's picture or word so that they're not interrupting.
Exactly.
I think it's really important because that interruption at that moment with a conversation so important and so powerful and so emotionally based could push people to just hold their thoughts and not speak their mind. And that's exactly what you don't want.
Mm-hmm. You know, a good tool for that during this time, I would say, I'll give you an example that I did with a family last fall. It was a three-generational family. They were having their family meeting in the Caymans over Thanksgiving. And as much as I wanted to be there, my children were kind of not okay with me skipping Thanksgiving with them to go facilitate a family meeting in the Cayman Islands. Can't imagine why. But what we did was, it was four adult siblings and their spouses, and they were all involved in various parts of the family business. And, you know, the grandpa and the grandma were the ones who I had been working with originally. And what we decided to do was ask, and this was, again, a much larger family, different kind of situation, but we asked the four oldest grandsons. They had nine grandsons, and each branch of the family had a couple of children. And so we asked the oldest four grandsons, one from each branch, to partner together and facilitate and lead the exercise together. So what families can do in these circumstances is, you know, maybe choose a child or a person who's living in your home who's not as outspoken or maybe not the dominant
right.
sibling in the conversation. I know in my family, I'd have to be like, ask my sister to do it because I would clearly be the dominant party in that. So I would tap like my sister to say, I need you to facilitate this. And so picking someone who is kind of unexpected and giving them that power to lead that conversation can be helpful when you don't have a third party under these quarantining and socially distanced times together.
Another question for you, Julie. Can you describe maybe one of the favorite moments that you've experienced during one of these?
Can I do two?
Okay.
Because I have two, and both were families where I was facilitating their first family meeting. A few years ago, I was working with these four women. They were all, I would say, probably in their 50s, and their father had passed away, and we had been working with the dad, and we'd kept asking him to have a family meeting. He kept putting it off. And then he passed away, leaving them with a very sizable private foundation and absolutely no philanthropic direction. And they each had their own families and they were close, but they didn't know where to start. And I love, I will fully admit my bias. I love the picture your life part of this exercise, because when people look at these images, they see their own, if everyone says a picture's worth a thousand words, right? And so you see your own perceptions of it. And these four sisters each selected the same image of an adult and a child walking on the beach together. And they all flipped it over and they're like, oh, look, we all have the same image. And in their heads, they immediately thought they had the same reason. But then when we started pressing, why did you select that image? What does it mean to you? They realized that they were closer together on their views than they thought, but they each also had a different reason for it. So that was a really neat experience. And the other one was actually this past December. I went down to the Philadelphia area to facilitate a family meeting with four children, 20, 18, 17, and 15. And we were in the middle of the values conversation and we were at the youngest son, you know, 15-year-old. And it's all, I find it's always the person who surprises the family most that gives me the biggest chuckle in these. But his comment was one that just really sat with me. He said, you know, one of the things that I have learned recently is that not every family is as close as ours is. And I just think that we're so lucky that we get to all be each other's best friends. And like as a parent, that kind of gives you the chills, right? To hear a child say that. And the parents, you could tell they were blown away. But even like his oldest sister, who had just gotten back from a semester in Australia, literally the night before, just got a little teary at it because it was true. And for this family, sharing their values was really an affirmation of that. And for them, sharing the thoughts around the picture your life exercise really allowed them to know some of the things that his siblings were concerned about on a deeper level. So those are probably my top two.
Very cool. I'm not going to say anything yet because I know I have something I have to talk about later. So I'll hold my thoughts for now. So how have you seen these conversations used by families over the years?
For many families, it's really about a starting point. I mentioned at the beginning that there's something so important about sharing your values, especially for families of wealth that we work with. We find that they tend to be concerned about things like, how much do I leave my children? How much is enough? How much is too much? How do I make sure that they can do whatever they want, but not nothing? How do we think about perpetuating the legacy of this family business? Or how do we, when we do have a family that's involved with a family business, but not everybody's involved, how do we make sure that everyone still feels that they're an integral part of the family, even if they're not in the day-to-day operations of the business? Or a brand new nonprofit or a nonprofit that needs to kind of do a reset on things. So a lot of different ways, but I know that you guys are all probably sick of hearing me talk. And I did mention that one of the things I love about your team is the fact that you guys don't just call me up and leverage me for intellectual experience. You actually do this yourselves. So can I turn it around and have Andrew talk about an experience with one of your clients?
Absolutely. Although I'm also going to give two. So thank you for breaking the ground on that, Julie. It is a wonderful experience to do this with clients. And the first family that comes to mind is a three-generation family, one that I've known personally for close to 30 years, actually more than 30 years now that I think about it. But we had the first and second generations at the table together around the holidays this past year. And they are a very close family, and they're a very open family as well. And the interesting thing for me, and I believe Tom, who was there with me, was that of these five people, mom and dad and three adult children, they're there, about 90% of the words that they chose were the same, both for the top three and the bottom three.
So true.
And it was very clear that the patriarch in this case not only had a clear vision for the family, but he'd been communicating that vision. And even though they all kind of described it a little bit differently, they had a very similar view to it. And we were actually able to take that and fashion it into a mission statement and kind of a family motto. It was really an impactful event. And then the other family that comes to mind was out in the Midwest, and they're a second generation family, no grandkids yet, somewhat younger than the other group. And this was more of the first time that they had kind of put something like this together. And they had a lot of different ideas. And as you might say, Julie, there was certainly no bad ideas. It was that they were a little bit unfocused. And they really saw the value in the fact that this was the first time that they'd had this conversation. And there were some common threads there, but they saw this as the beginning of something. And it was the beginning of taking this to another level and using this opportunity to explore the different paths. And I think to see that second family, while they're pretty close, it really kind of coalesce around that conversation was absolutely fantastic. And again, you know, in that one, it also gave the ability for one of the children, the youngest one who happened to be a little bit quieter, as you said, we were able to get that person to bring their ideas to the forefront, whereas they typically tend to be a little bit quiet. So I think those were just two really, really wonderful experiences that we had.
Mm-hmm. I love those stories, Andrew. I think that you brought up a really good point. When families do have a set of core values that they can agree upon, it really can be helpful. Some families do like to create a family mission statement or a family charter that they revisit on an annual basis that talks about these are the handful of things that are really important to us. These are going to be the principles that guide us in our decisions and in how we support each other. I've done this exercise for families where it helps them define what their philanthropic initiatives are, whether it's, you know, the parents had been giving to pretty much anything that people requested of them, and they wanted to come together as a family around a set of things that they could each believe in. I think that can be a really helpful tool for, again, that common language that the purposeful dialogue gives you. With that first family you mentioned too, one thing that I use a lot when I'm talking to people in our family, when I'm wearing my family advisory hat, is the concept of floor time, right? And the concept of floor time really is about, you know, when your children are little, it's about putting your phone away, putting your distractions away, and actually getting down and playing with them and connecting them with them on a level that they can see your eyes and they know that you're interested and engaged. And as our kids get older, floor time is more difficult because not only are our heads in electronics, but our children's heads are in electronics. And that is, I think, one of the great times about this opportunity we have with coronavirus is you can have some of these deep, meaningful conversations. With teenagers, I will always tell parents that floor time is easiest when you're driving in the car together. Because for some reason, when teenagers don't have to make eye contact with you, it's easier to get them talking about things that are important. So, and I can say this since you guys know my kids are so little that clearly I haven't gotten there yet, but they talk a lot when they're in their car seats in the back seat. So I assume it's true for teenagers too. But really, that's one of the ideas behind this is, you know, getting people talking. But the values, when you talk about multi-generational families like that, having similar values, I always tell families, I'm like, I can tell you spent a lot of floor time when your kids and when your grandkids were little, because that's a really great way to pass along those values and make sure that they're sticky. And our team says all the time, values are caught, they're not taught. And I think most parents know that our children will always do as we do, not as we say, right? So I mentioned that we've done this exercise a lot with foundation boards, whether it's a newly formed family foundation or, you know, a large nonprofit that has new board members and kind of needs a reset. But Greg, you've done this as a live experience. And while we were all teasing you about talking too much, we haven't heard from you. So do you want to share with us an experience you have with a board?
Absolutely. I appreciate it. And yeah, this one's pretty special. So it started with a family use, and then it turned into a board. So we have a family that went to our philanthropy forum, actually, and the head of a family office, he found the exercises to be extremely helpful when they first had a whole session about it at the philanthropy forum. And so when he came home and did it with his family, it had such an enormous impact on that his wife, who I'd never met before at the time, reached out and said, I actually looked back years ago and just found her email. She actually was the incoming board of directors for a women's health organization in her local town. And she, the exact words were, they were looking to redefine their brand. And so she thought that the picture activity in particular would benefit, in her exact words, will benefit our deep dive into topics such as what we believe, what are our values, and what is the path forward for women's health. And so I thought that was pretty powerful. So with that, we she reached out, I think, like a month before when their retreat was going to be upcoming. And one of Julie's colleagues, before Julie was here at the firm, we had a series of calls preparing for this to help her prepare. She didn't want a third party. She wanted to run it as the new board. So we taught her best practices or better practices and walked through it. And the feedback was remarkable. So again, I pulled back a couple of years ago and found her email, but she said it was so productive that they took it to each women's clinic around the area and did it at the clinic level as well. And then she said that exact word that they couldn't stop talking about how much they enjoyed the exercise and how it allowed them to get a deeper insight into their fellow board members. And it was interesting, even at the highest end of the organization, she said that one of the highlights was that the executive director and her as board president actually picked the same word in their top card as compassion. And so as Julie mentioned, the words mean different things to different people. And she's like, her exact words is that was unexpected, but it immediately created a bonding moment to guide their work together for the year. So that's just an example of how impactful that was. And it kind of snowballed. So obviously it started at the family level. They loved it, took it to the board level. They loved it. She said one of the board members is a high school teacher. He actually took the cards and did it with the students as well. I think it's contagious once you get going, and it just speaks volumes to the exercise in itself.
And mm-hmm. I'm just gonna jump in there, Greg, and say I'm appalled at Andrew and myself that we have not done this as an exercise with the team. All of the things that we do as a team together, the fact that we haven't done this yet is almost preposterous, but that's going to change.
That's a great idea.
As I'm listening to Greg talk, I'm like, okay, well, I learned something from today's call. So that's fantastic.
Well,
sorry, Julie, please.
No, you're fine. I have to say that I'm appalled that you guys haven't done this as a team either, especially since I'm in Stanford usually pre-coronavirus once a week. You have a facilitator, guys. Come on. There are a couple things that Greg mentioned that I really want to point out that can be really interesting for families at this time too. So when you have a board, you have people who have their own experiences, their own backgrounds, their own life view that's really shaped them. And that tends to be very different from family members who've grown up together, experienced things together. But what changes is when families grow, right? How do we grow? We grow by either having babies or by bringing on new family members, by getting married or entering into serious partnerships with other people, right? And so what I love when I facilitate family meetings where the family has grown is the fact that you can have in-laws in the room. Who, you know, maybe you have, I did a family meeting literally like 3 days before we got locked down in March. I was in Jackson Hole with a family that has 4 siblings, 3 of whom are married, and they've been doing family meetings for years, but it's always been, you know, dad kind of sitting at the head of the table talking at them. And this was a big step back to talk about values, which they hadn't. And one of the son-in-laws made the comment that it was so interesting as they need to talk about how they think of the family wealth as the vehicle that's going to keep their 4 separate family units together in the future. Understanding where each unit was coming from a values perspective was so important. And when you have a family that's been very close-knit, and then, you know, maybe in this case, one of the siblings had been married for 10 years. She'd been with her husband since high school. Another one, they'd only been married a year, and a third, they'd been married about 3 years. But those in-laws bring their own values and their own ideas and their own backgrounds and experiences, which can really change what families are going through. And I would also say that it's so good to not just do this exercise once. I have found in my personal life that when I revisit this exercise every couple of years, depending on the circumstances in my life, my words sometimes change. My picture of the guy walking through the vineyard always remains the same because my husband and I will someday retire walking distance from a vineyard. But the words that I look for that are important, and sometimes the pictures change a little bit. And so, Tom, I know we are having this call primarily because you had done this exercise exercise at one point with your family and then decided to do it again once you were socially distancing together. So can you talk to us a little bit about what it's been like to do this with your own family?
Sure. As context, it's helpful to say that this was not the first dinner table conversation that my family has had. So we're a pretty close family. And my kids routinely say how grateful and lucky they are that they are best of friends, and they truly are, which is nice. Years and years and years ago, when the kids were 3 and 2, we left Connecticut to go live in Arizona for a month together. And there was a little Mexican restaurant called Javelina Cantina. And on the, it was decorated with sharks. You would have loved it, Andrew, because it had all sharks in the, it was really funny. That's a sidebar though. They had little boxes of table talk at the table. And I think that was probably our kids' first experience at being forced to talk at the table about something that they didn't get to choose the conversation. And it was fun, and we enjoyed that. And fast forward years later, we do an exercise the night before Thanksgiving, and we ask the kids to come to the table with an index card with a charity on the front side and on the back of the card, how they intend to support that family with something other than financial capital. And we've been talking as a family for years, and then all of a sudden these cards came up. And so we've done it twice. We did it pre-corona, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago or 2 years ago when the cards first came out. And then we did it again during coronavirus time. And what was surprising to me was the difference in people's responses. And I think that the, you know, just as you were talking about how, you know, your words might change, and I'm going to pick on my son just a second because he's a different cat at times, but he couldn't follow the rules this time. So he had to choose groups of words that all meant the same thing to him. So he had his, you know, X words and his Y words and his Z words. But the picture was the one that kind of blew me away. For those of you who don't know, there is a picture of clearly it's nighttime outside. You're looking through the window of an office building at a lone figure sitting at a desk under fluorescent lights working. And that was one of the pictures that my son chose. And I had always looked at that picture with, you know, a tinge of regret that I've spent so much time working and on the road over the years. And I was petrified that he was going to say something like, I don't want to be that guy, like, you know, my dad. But he went completely the opposite way. And as I look at that picture, I see negative. And he said, I want to be that person researching and doing the work and getting things done to change the world. And I just thought that was, you know, a nice moment, and one that I was literally cringing as I saw him pick that card out and put it on the top. So I would encourage people in this moment in time where I think this works even if you're not under the same roof. Mm-hmm. So I think doing a Zoom call with these will work, and we're happy we've got them. We can ship them to whomever would like them. And I think it's well worth the time to start the conversation. So, you know, with that, I would say, Julie, thank you for your time. I know this isn't the only tool that you have in your tool bag. Can you talk a little bit about some of the other tools that you and your team have come up with that you use with families?
Sure. So this is one of our most well-developed tools that we use quite frequently. We also have exercises we have a really fun exercise called the Family Balance Sheet that really helps families to kind of take a step back and look at the ways they view the 5 different types of capital that I mentioned. And just seeing how families are on the same page can be really helpful. We are working on a new tool that hopefully will be available in the fourth quarter that is going to help people identify which of the UN's sustainable development goals is the most important to them or that they are the most passionate about. But then I don't want people to think that UBS has this kind of monopoly on values cards tools, because there are other ones that exist. We happen to like ours best because we had taken 15 or 20 different sets and said, oh, we like this, we don't like this, we like this, and really kind of created our own based on that. But there are other tools, like I think you mentioned Table Topics. I love Table Topics. I sent my sister actually and her boys Table Topics for teens for Christmas as part of their gift. But there are organizations like 2164, which does a lot of different exercises on, you know, they have a values-based cards tool as well as a money messages tool. If you go on Amazon, you know, in addition to things like Table Topics, there are icebreakers, best self icebreakers, our moments for kids, my intent. I mean, there's so many different things. And it was funny because when you start to scroll in and start looking at what other resources exist, you also start to get ads for them and new ones that you've never heard of before. And because we are in, because we're all in Connecticut, I can say too, you know, Yale has this Center for Emotional Health that has this really neat educational tool called the Ruler Method that is actually in all the public schools in New York City. And I know I have a friend in Chicago who, where it's in school systems there, they're in school systems around the country, but they have been doing a lot too around, they have some really phenomenal resources on like thinking about where your emotions and your moods are, but also on helping you build a family charter. So there are lots of really cool resources out there. This is a great conversation starter. The Purposeful Dialogues are good exercises, but for families who, you know, maybe do this and then want to continue with other types of things, maybe having one new question every night at dinner because you're tired of asking, how are you? How was your day? What did you learn today? Who, you can't do the, my favorite used to be, who were you nice to today? I can't ask that anymore because my kids aren't seeing anyone but me and my husband. So they're not really being nice to anyone. But so the things like, that's where things like Table Topics can be great because you just pull one each night and they have different topics for different resources and age groups and outside of family too.
Well, Julie, this has been really great. I've been through the cards many times, but I learned a ton of new things today and I'm looking forward to going through them with my family tonight. So really want to thank you for your time and efforts in bringing these tools to families, especially during a time that's difficult for so many people. And I want to thank all of our listeners for listening to our chat and I'll turn the call back over to Jill.
Thank you all for joining us today. Just a quick reminder, our next call will be next Wednesday, May 20th at 7 o'clock in the evening, featuring automotive editorial consultant Robert Ross from The Rob Report to discuss the state of high-performance cars and the car auction market. Details for this and all of our upcoming events can be found on our website, ubs.com/team/ChanceMantione. Also,
I just have to laugh because we're talking right now about, you know, serious emotional intelligence and bringing families together. And then next week in the evening, we're going to talk about really fast cars.
Cars
are all over the place.
Alrighty. Also, we are hoping to have a podcast recording of today's call up soon. If anyone wishes to share some of Julie's insights with friends, family, or colleagues, thank you again and have a great afternoon, everyone.
Thank you, Jill.